We'll hear argument now in the case of United States against Spears. Mr. Thetford.
Good morning, Judge. May it please the Court. My name is Tony Thetford. I represent the appellant in this case, Marlon Spears. Our argument is simple. Our position is that the district court erred in denying my client's motion to suppress evidence in this case. Now, I understand that my presentation largely deals with Franks and the court's denial of the motion to suppress based on Franks. However, our position overall is this. We believe that even if those portions that we asked for in terms of relief in Franks were denied, we still believe that probable cause would be lacking in this case for these reasons. We pointed out four areas of investigation where we thought, or we believe, certainly that there were material omissions or material misrepresentations in this case. However, as to each of those areas except for one, none of those areas are relevant to the probable cause calculus. First of all, there's the issue of the electricity usage in the case. In my brief, I indicate that NIPSCO, which is the power carrier for the area that's at issue here, responded to a subpoena from the affiant a day after the affiant had gone before the magistrate seeking the warrant at issue in this case. But once that information came back, it was clear that the information that the affiant represented was given to her, would have been given to her, was not available to her through those means. There was testimony at the Franks hearing itself that the information received was through a still unknown person at NIPSCO, some contractor who apparently gave information to the affiant regarding the electricity usage in the house. However, even if that information is true, and even if that information is accepted as true, the electricity usage alone and the spike in electricity usage alone should not go into the calculus. In fact, the government presented billing in this case, billing relative to the spike in electricity use. The greatest spike in electricity use was after my client was already arrested in August of 2008.
So even if we give you that, you know, I mean, we strike the NIPCO information and your client's criminal history, you know, we have the issue of the drugs, even though it was a really small quantity found in the trash along with the CI's information. So, you know, isn't that enough for probable cause?
Actually, I would agree, and that's the position that the government takes, that the drugs alone would be enough for probable cause. However, as happened here, when the affiant went before the magistrate in this case, she failed to represent where that single stem was recovered from. There was information here, and there was testimony, obviously, that a trash pull was done. This trash was taken from behind the home of my client, the home that my client lived in. During the trash pull, the trash was actually placed on the back of a flatbed truck. That truck was controlled by the Hammond Police Department. That truck was taken to a garage and the trash subsequently searched. However, what came out during the Franks hearing is that the actual stem that was recovered, the single stem, was actually recovered from the bed of the truck. This truck was actually used in prior trash pulls. So there's been no clarification as to where that stem came from. It was presumed at the time that the affiant presented the information to the magistrate that it came from the trash pull, but we subsequently know that that's not true. So, again, Your Honor, as to that single stem, we certainly agree that that would be enough for probable cause. But in this circumstance, since it operated as a material omission relative to the information that the magistrate had, we believe that it should be stricken and not a part of the calculus here. Your Honor, we also made issue as to certain other items that were pulled from this trash pull, including certain aquarium equipment. It should be clear that the affiant, in her affidavit, indicated that the information that she had gotten from this confidential source included information of high-intensity global.
Let me go back to this, though, the STEM. And there was no evidence here that the officers believed or had any reason to believe the STEM may have come from another residence, right?
Well, there's no information here, but it also wasn't addressed, actually, Your Honor, by the district court judge when after the Franks hearing, and he made his ruling and opinion here. He never actually addressed that particular issue regarding where that STEM came from. So the record does not show where the officers made issue of that STEM having to have come from that trash bag. But, again, I think they were silenced on that issue because the initial representation is that the STEM actually came from the trash itself, from those trash bags, from the trash pull, as opposed to, again, the flatbed truck. Again, Your Honor, we made issue as to, you know, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if that's okay?
Certainly, Counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Kirchhoff.
May it please the Court. Good morning. Emily Kirchhoff on behalf of the United States Government. At a Franks hearing, in order to be successful, a defendant must show that the affidavit had false information or omitted material facts, that the affiant included the statements or omitted the facts intentionally or with a reckless disregard for the truth, and that the information was material to probable cause. Here, the district court found that the testimony presented at the Franks hearing did not satisfy those three requirements. Starting with the electricity usage, the district court credited the testimony of both Duncanson and task force agent or FBI analyst Strapon that they spoke with representatives from NIPSCO, that NIPSCO provided the information, and that they believed that information to be true. The district court found that there was no evidence in the record of intentional misstatements or reckless disregard for the truth, and the government's position is that there is no evidence in the record to find that the district court's findings were clearly erroneous. As to the defendant's criminal history, the district court found that it was a false statement, but that there was no intentional or reckless disregard for including that statement in the affidavit, and that in the alternative, the defendant's criminal history was not material to the finding of probable cause. It's the government's position that there is no evidence to refute those determinations by the district court. As to the PVC piping and the defendant's claim that it was clearly obvious that there was no PVC piping at the home, the district court credited Officer Duncanson's testimony that she was unable to approach the house both when she drove by the house with a confidential source because the defendant was in the yard and when they conducted the trash pull because of the dogs in the defendant's yard and the knowledge that they had that the defendant would check when those dogs began barking and that people were approaching the house. So given that credible testimony, there is no indication that this was a statement that Officer Duncanson believed was false and then that she then included in the affidavit with reckless disregard for the truth. Finally, as to the trash pull, the district court, on page 6 of its opinion, stated the important thing is that the agents all consistently said that they found a marijuana stem in the trash along with the aquarium bubble stone and an empty aquarium heater box. This is an explicit factual finding by the district court that the marijuana stem was in the trash taken from the defendant's home and that the officer correctly included that information in the affidavit. Insofar as the defendant is challenging Officer Duncanson's decision to not include the lawful uses of the aquarium heater or the aquarium aeration stone, the bubble stone, the government's position is that is obviously has a lawful use, and that kind of information can just be drawn upon by the magistrate judge who is reviewing the warrant, and that the important information in the affidavit is the information provided by Trooper Sample that those also have unlawful purposes when there is a hydroponic marijuana grow operation. If there are no questions from the panel, I will submit on the briefs.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
Counsel. Anything further, Mr. Thetford?
Just briefly, Your Honor. Thank you.
If counsel takes the position that this court should review this case under a clear error standard, we take a different position. We believe that there's clearly a question, a mixed question of law and fact here, and that those questions of law should be determined under the de novo standard. That would include any findings of the district court. Certainly their finding as to probable cause overall should be reviewed de novo, and this court should make a determination itself as to whether enough information existed.
Now, why should we review de novo the finding of probable cause? The Supreme Court has said that when a warrant is actually issued, the magistrate gets very substantial deference. It's only when a warrant is not issued that a court of appeals reviews a probable cause finding independently. So here, in a warrant case, why would we be acting independently on the question whether this amounted to probable cause?
Well, Your Honor, as to what I suggest is this. The court made certain legal findings. The district court made certain legal findings. Included in those legal findings was the finding of probable cause.
That finding had been made initially by the magistrate. We have case law on this, and the Supreme Court said in Illinois against Gates and later cases that when a warrant has been issued by a magistrate, the Court of Appeals does not make an independent determination of probable cause.
I do believe that this court can still, though, make a de novo finding as to the reckless disregard piece that we've argued here. Now, obviously, the district court made a determination that the affiant here did not act in reckless disregard for the truth. We certainly take a different position. And again, the issues that were presented to the magistrate at the time, we believe, actually substantiate our argument that the affiant acted in reckless disregard when she took a 180-degree turn some months later, when she was called to testify to those issues during the Franks hearing itself. I think the court should take note of how, again, the Franks hearing even came to be here as further indicative of the position taken by the affiant in this case. I certainly understand that the court granted the Franks hearing, and my client is appreciative of that, but we do believe that the court's ruling in Franks was incorrect. There are no more questions?
Mm-hmm. Looks like there are none. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you very much.
The case is taken under advisement. Our final case of the day.